All right, welcome to another episode of the Justify Your Existence podcast. I'm your host, Brendan Farrell. Today, I am joined by my good friend, Tyler Natuno. Tyler, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well, Brendan. Good to be here. Good to be back on the show.
Yeah, I had Tyler over the summer. We talked about the video game for a bit. This time, we're talking like actual football played by actual humans. Tyler, for the people who are unfamiliar, what all do you do?
Yeah, so I run a website called LSU Wire for USA Today Sports. I also work for a website USA Today Sports owns called For the Win, where I kind of do more national college football stuff, also cover some NFL, some baseball, some other stuff. So that's kind of basically what I've got going on.
Yeah, you can follow Tyler on Twitter at Tyler Natuno. You can follow me on Twitter at BFarrell727. I brought Tyler on this week because, you know, we've got the LSU Ole Miss game this weekend, and you know, just had to bring in one of my buddies to talk about at least some of the LSU perspective on things. And yeah, how are you feeling about this game?
I mean, you know, I think it's shaping up to be a pretty similar game to what we saw last year. I think it's going to be really exciting. I mean, I've kind of, you know, staked my claim on this being another shootout, even though I do think these teams are both better defensively than they were last year. I still think this is going to be a high scoring game, but I mean, it's one I'm excited for. I think really important for the trajectory of both these teams. I'm not sure we really thought that both of them would come into this game with a loss. So obviously you could lose this game and still remain theoretically in the running for a college football playoff spot, but with the way we've seen the SEC kind of cannibalize each other, this feels a little bit to me like a de facto elimination game.
Yeah, especially since Ole Miss has Georgia on the schedule, I can't imagine them losing to LSU and Georgia and still having a shot at this thing.
And LSU has Bama and Texas A&M and Oklahoma still. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I do sort of see this one playing out similarly to last year, even though, as you said, I think both teams are better defensively, especially LSU. Not that I think LSU's defense is good, but I just don't think they're as catastrophically bad as they were last year.
Yeah, I agree.
Like last year, they finished 122nd in the country in adjusted EPA per play.
This is a mediocre LSU defense. It's not a disastrous one, which is what we saw last year, which is progress, I guess.
Yeah, they're still horrendous against the pass, but
yes.
You know, they're not, again, they're not as catastrophically terrible as last year, which is technically an improvement.
Yeah, and I think the front seven in particular is playing a lot better. They've been pretty good against the run this year, which is impressive, I will say, considering the injuries they've already had there this year. Jacoby and Guillory, their only defensive tackle that came in with or returned with any real playing experience to speak of. He tore his Achilles in the second game of the season. He's done for the year. Obviously, Harold Perkins, the major loss there, tore his ACL in the UCLA win. So he's also done for the year. So they're missing two pretty heavy hitters from that front seven. Obviously, we've only seen one game without Perkins. It was against South Alabama. So do with that as you will, but it was the most complete defensive performance of the season for LSU. So,
yeah, and I think you're probably feeling the same way about Ole Miss coming off a pretty darn good game against South Carolina.
Yeah.
In a sort of, it was a get right game, but I think people were like weirdly concerned about that game. And I wasn't buying it personally. But I think you sort of saw what Ole Miss was supposed to be after the Kentucky game.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. I didn't really see them laying an egg in that game against South Carolina. You know, I think South Carolina is a competent team, but I just didn't see them performing like that 2 weeks in a row. I mean, I will say this, like I was concerned about this team after the Kentucky loss, because I don't think Kentucky's great, at least offensively, and they looked pretty good offensively in that game. But I will say I kind of am not as like, you know, I'm not being as reactionary about that loss now with what we just saw happen across the country and in the SEC last week. I mean, after what Bama did against Vandy, what Tennessee did against Arkansas, losing to a Kentucky team that's at least really good defensively, like in a game, in a way that they lost. I mean, you know, you're not going to give up a 50-yard pass on 4th and 7 with the game on the line most of the time. So I think you got to probably be feeling a little bit better if you're an Ole Miss fan than you were a week ago, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm interested to see, just how much of a I don't want to call it a get right game, but I'm curious how much of the really high octane Ole Miss offense that we saw for like the first like 4 games of the season does against, not only a power four opponent, but also one that is tremendously susceptible to the pass.
Yeah. No, I think it's a major concern. I mean, it's why I see this being a high scoring game, because I do think, even though I'm pretty high on Ole Miss's defense, all things considered. Like, I didn't love the way they looked against Brock Vandegrift, but like, I think all in all, this is a pretty good unit, like across the board, well-rounded. I think LSU is not capable of stopping the pass game from Jackson Dart. They weren't last year. I don't think the secondary's really gotten a ton better, to be honest with you. The personnel is pretty much the same. They didn't like portal the secondary other than getting Jarden Gilbert, a safety from A&M, who's been all right, but has now sort of been supplanted in the lineup at times. They kind of were just banking on development from young guys. That's been a bit hit or miss. So I think that's a major concern. I just think that Ole Miss hasn't played anyone that can pass the ball like this LSU team can. I think shutting down a South Carolina team that isn't really able, in a position right now with Lenora Sellers, who I think is a dynamic player, but they're not really a great, airing it out team. I think this is going to be a very new challenge for this Ole Miss defense.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, you mentioned it that, they did not exactly play all that well when it came to defending the pass against Kentucky. I mean, some of that was just straight up penalties and, whether or not you felt like they were penalties. But, when you look at how Vandegrift has played this year, the Ole Miss game sticks out a lot.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, yeah, I mean, when you look at these two quarterbacks, they are the best two quarterbacks in the SEC right now by most metrics. They're 1 and 2 in passing yards, 1 and 2 in passing touchdowns. I think that LSU has the potential to really stress this Ole Miss secondary, like just in a way that, again, like they haven't been yet, not just because of Nussmeier, but because of Kyren Lacy, who looks kind of like he has the potential to be that next, big play LSU receiver. Aaron Anderson, who's actually leading the team in receiving, has stepped up nicely. And, it sounds like they're going to get Chris Hilton back this week, who is expected to play a major role in the passing game this season. Suffered a ankle injury in the preseason and hasn't played so far this season. So LSU could be getting maybe it's one of its best receivers back this week. So I think we haven't even necessarily seen the offense be at the ceiling of what it has the potential to be, especially with Caden Durham emerging in the run game, which LSU really hasn't had an effective running game from the running backs in quite a few years. Obviously, Jaden Daniels ran for 1,100 yards last year, but Garrett Nussmeier can't do that. So I think finding a way to be more balanced offensively is really going to be helpful, especially in games like this.
I would like to thank you for mentioning my Lord and Savior, Jaden Daniels, right now.
I was going to
forgive
say,
me.
better than anyone. He looks like Lamar Jackson out there running the ball.
Yeah, no, it's amazing to me how I watched Jaden Daniels tear up both Mississippi State or Mississippi schools like in person last year, and was still like, yeah, no, I like Drake May instead. And now I'm like, you idiot.
Well, to be fair, I watched every single Jaden Daniels game in 2 years at LSU, and I still liked Drake May more. So,
Yeah. But you mentioned that Ole Miss hasn't really faced a top end wide receiver, but I mean they held CFB 25 star Nick Harbor to 3 catches and 16 yards, so checkmate.
And I do think like we were, I think there was reason to be concerned about how Ole Miss would handle, the pass rushing duo that South Carolina has, obviously probably the best group of pass rushers in the SEC. I thought they managed it pretty well. Like, I think I'm overall, I exited that game, especially in light of what we saw around the country on Saturday. I exited that Ole Miss South Carolina game a lot higher on Ole Miss than I was, before it.
Yeah, no. I realized that it came the same week that they beat the team that handily beat Kentucky. But after seeing some of the losses from SEC schools last week, you got to be sitting there thinking, you know what? A loss to a top 25-ish Kentucky team, it's not that bad, actually.
And like, I mean, again, a Kentucky team that had opportunities to beat Georgia. I mean, we've seen like it's hard to pull that card because it seems like Georgia does this all the time, right? Where they like have one or two games a year that they just inexplicably win by a field goal or less, and they score less than 17 points and still win. But I mean, I think we know that this Kentucky team is good defensively. I mean, Bama got some turnovers early in that game against Georgia, but they couldn't stop Georgia in the second half. I think Beck threw for like 400 yards in that game. They were totally shut down against Kentucky. So I think the takeaway from that Ole Miss Kentucky game in hindsight should probably be Kentucky's defense is legit. And Ole Miss just got pretty unlucky in a game that it wins 9 times out of 10.
I'm taking a step back here. You mentioned how like Ole Miss might defend against the pass rush. I kind of want to turn it around, and I'm very curious about how Ole Miss's pass rush is going to do against LSU because last week I was looking it up, and South Carolina's quarterbacks take sacks at an ungodly rate, right? And I mentioned about how Ole Miss's pass rush could really feast on that, and they did. This week, I looked it up for LSU. Garrett Nussmeier has taken one sack on 202 dropbacks. I mean, there's only one quarterback who has a higher pressure to sack percentage. I mean, one sack on 36 pressures is nuts.
And I think part of that is him being decisive. I mean, you're seeing a guy who's been in the system for the current system for 3 years now, and I think is really comfortable running it. But at the same time, I mean, this LSU offensive line is just unreal. I mean, you got two guys who anchoring at the tackle positions that could very easily be first round picks come next spring, and Will Campbell and Emory Jones. And then interior, I mean, they returned four of five starters along the offensive line. The only one they didn't was the center spot. And DJ Chester, a young guy who stepped into that role, seems to be playing pretty well. And now we're starting to see the ground game emerge too, which I discussed earlier. But LSU was not running the ball very efficiently earlier in the season. Josh Williams and Caleb Jackson both averaging like 5 yards or less a carry. Caden Durham, since he's emerged, is averaging more than eight. Granted, explosive plays are inflating that, certainly, but I think they're finding a lot more down-to-down success. So between the way that this offensive line is protecting Garrett Nussmeier, keeping him from facing any pressure, because I mean, Nussmeier, he throws such a good ball. He's got so much poise in the pocket. Like if you let him operate from a clean pocket, he's going to tear you up.
I am biased against Garrett Nussmeier solely because I was exposed to his dad's offense against my will while in college and in high school. So it really hurts me to say this, but I mean, I think LSU has gotten everything that they could have asked for out of Garrett Nussmeier so far.
I think after Jim McElwain got fired, I never thought I'd have to put so much thought into a Nussmeier ever again, but here we are. No, I mean, I think I went into the year pretty high on Garrett Nussmeier just because the flashes we had seen from him playing when he'd come in for Jaden Daniels due to injury a couple times and obviously starting in the bowl game against Wisconsin, he looked really good. And I expected that he would look really good because he's playing behind a good offensive line, but I was a little skeptical in the sense that, they lost so much production at receiver. Obviously, Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas, who's been fantastic so far in the NFL. Like both those guys look like the two best rookie receivers in the NFL right now, at least arguably, I would say. So I think it's, a pretty significant loss, pretty significant losses there. But I think they've still got enough talent at the receiver position. The offensive line's been great. And now that they're starting to answer the question of can this team run the ball, we're really seeing Nussmeier play at a really high level. So, I mean, I think he's just having a very nice year. I mean, we'll see how it looks once they get into the meat of the SEC schedule. Hasn't really played a fantastic defense to this point, but they're I think he's done a really nice job stepping in for, it's hard to replace a Heisman winner, and he's done a pretty good job of that.
Sort of How do you feel about this one being in Death Valley this time around instead of being in Oxford?
I mean, I think it matters. I mean, first of all, Ole Miss hasn't won here since 2008, I think, or hasn't won in Death Valley since 2008.
I
So,
saw something like that. Yeah.
yeah. So, I mean, I think that psychologically, I mean, you can debate how much that matters, but I think that does have an effect psychologically. I mean, we saw Ole Miss came into Tiger Stadium as a pretty big favorite 2 years ago, and they lost, and that was kind of, they lost pretty big, and that was the loss that sort of, or the win, sorry, for LSU that sort of spurred their SEC West title run. So yeah, I mean, and I think that Ole Miss team might have been better than that LSU team, but so I do think it does matter coming into Death Valley. I mean, night games in Death Valley are very, very difficult. It has the reputation it has for a reason. So I mean, I do think that matters for sure. I mean, assuming this game is toss up ish, which I kind of feel like it is. I think Ole Miss is, last I checked, like a field goal favorite on the road. So according to Vegas, it's a slight push in their direction. But certainly I think the crowd and the environment could swing a game like this, especially given the sort of psychology of not having won here in 15 years.
Yeah, Ole Miss has sort of been like sort of brought along slowly when it comes to road environments. I think their first road game of the year was at Wake Forest, and then it's okay, and then South Carolina, and then it's LSU, right? So it'll be interesting to see how they navigate all that.
Well, just random side note, doesn't really have to do with what we're talking about, but I'm just curious what your take is on this, because I saw Shane Beamer address it, and now Brian Kelly's also addressed it. What's the deal with the injury timeouts? Like, what's going on there?
Well, I mean, the big one was the clip from like the Kentucky game a couple weeks ago, where it's like, you remember that Monday Night Football clip of like the Giants where like two guys fall over at the same time?
Vaguely, yeah.
Yeah, it was sort of like that, where like one of Ole Miss's running backs like looks over to the sideline, and then he just like holds his like hamstring and just like falls over. Yeah, there have been.
Beamer was pretty upset about it after the game. Kelly kind of just said, Kelly was basically like, we just leave that in the hands of the SEC. We don't worry about it.
Yeah, there have been, we'll just say, a lot of injury timeouts in Ole Miss football games this year. That is for sure. And I think a lot of folks around here are really sick of it.
Yeah. Now I was curious what the sort of, because like I've seen the oppositional perspective on that. I hadn't really heard. I don't think has Kiffin addressed it. I haven't. If Kiffin has addressed it, I haven't seen it.
I'm not entirely sure. But yeah, no, that's
Yeah, I
definitely
was
been a
just curious
storyline
about
this
that.
year. Yeah,
Yeah.
it's been a weird thing. I don't know, and it's weird too, because right, like you think of Ole Miss as a team that plays fast, so clearly they should be up for anybody going fast, but I don't know. But yeah, I mean, just in general, like how are you feeling about this weekend of college football coming up?
I mean, it's exciting. I mean, part of me wishes LSU wasn't playing such a high profile game, because I'm going to be locked into that one versus paying attention to some other ones. Because I mean, it's exciting. What else do we got? I mean, obviously Ohio State, Oregon is the big one, which is, I think, so fascinating because neither of those teams have really been tested. Although Boise looks like a bit of a test now for Oregon. They're a pretty good football team. But Ohio State hasn't really been tested at all, unless you are particularly bullish on Iowa for some reason, which I'm not. But I mean, I'm excited about that one. I'm trying to remember what are some of the other. Oh, we got Red River. I mean, I think Texas is a lot better than Oklahoma, but that doesn't really matter, it seems, in terms of how Red River plays out. So yeah, it's exciting. And I think this year, like, I don't want to say it's 2007 again, because I think that's a bit premature, and 2007 was something pretty special. But I think we could be shaping up for something similar to that. I mean, I think the 12-team playoff sort of changes the, I maybe it's a psychology thing of just not feeling like it's do or die every single week. I don't know, but we've seen a lot of chaos around college football this year, and I keep going into these big games feeling like I don't have a very clear picture of what's about to happen, which is not super typical, I don't think.
I think it's just funny that like, I think this was the week, during like July or August that started all of the like a fall wedding discourse, as it does every summer, right? I'm pretty sure that this was the game that people screen captains like, if this is the day of your wedding, I'm not coming, right? And it feels weird to look at this weekend. It feels a little bit weird to look at this weekend now like that after the carnage that was last weekend. You know, last weekend was supposed to be normal and kind of whatever, and then just turned into, to borrow a shutdown forecast term, blood week.
Well, you kind of need that. Like, you kind of need it to be a slate that no one thinks is going to be good because, like, even if there's chaos this week, like, I'm not going to be stunned if LSU beats Ole Miss or if Oklahoma beats Texas or I guess Ohio State's. I don't know who's the favorite in that game at Oregon, but whoever's the underdog wins that game. But yeah, you know, I just think that we're seeing a lot of parity around the sport, and I'm not sure. It's just making for a lot of exciting football. But the point being, like, when those games are all, you know, big helmet matchups, like, there's not really shock. But I think last week there were so many games that were, I mean, all those upsets happened on the road. So it was a lot of potential trap games in hindsight, you know, games against middle of the road teams, but on the road, in the case of like Alabama coming off an emotional high, like, maybe we should have seen that coming more than we did, but hard to predict. Alabama suffering the worst loss in program history.
I mean, look, we all should have known that Alabama was in for a rude awakening heading into the scary home field advantage of Vanderbilt's live construction site.
I remember I was watching the game with some people who weren't aware of that, and I was like trying to explain to them that it was an active construction site, and then right as I was saying it, it cut to Vanderbilt kicking an extra point in the end zone where there's literal construction workers standing there during the game. It's quite a spectacle, but not awesome for Vandy. I mean, that scene after the game, it's like one of those like, okay, Vandy, like I underestimated your game. You know, the energy, sealing the goalpost, dumping them in the Cumberland River. That was awesome.
Yeah, you know, you figured that like one of those construction workers could have helped them get the uprights in, right?
I'm sure those construction workers immediately joined into the crowd.
Yeah, I mean, like, golly, you sort of that was kind of like the Calgarithm thing where it's like I was unaware of your game, Vanderbilt fan base.
I mean, Cal, let's talk about Cal for a second, just because I mean, talk about like a team that is succeeding in spite of like nobody at an administrative level caring at all. I mean, like, this is a program that is like was basically left for dead during COVID, and like Justin Wilcox, and obviously a very passionate fan base, a fan base that is more passionate than I previously realized, is sort of just, you know, through the power of sheer will, making this a competitive team and a fun program. So I think that's an exciting storyline for sure.
Yeah, no, it's amazing what happens when College Game Day goes to somewhere other than like same six places on loop.
Yeah, there's still a few because we've covered this on For the Win, places where it hasn't gone, like a few that are surprising. Like, I'm pretty sure it's never been to Maryland, which is a little weird to me. It's hard, kind of hard to believe, but.
Yeah, there was like a tri there was like an Aflac trivia question or whatever sponsor it is now. During one of the games last week, and I was like, what are the power four schools that like College Game Day has never been to? And there were a decent amount on there. I mean, it's, you know.
But hey, we got to go to like Texas A&M or LSU for the third time this season.
Yeah, exactly. But hey, whatever. But yeah, I mean, just you know, how the last, you know, sort of couple weeks for LSU been? I know that they had the disappointing loss to start the year, but like how they sort of bounced back from all that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I mean, like, I think the in terms of the fan base, like, I think it's hard for me to gauge because I think it might be a little bit a bit of a disappointing start for the fan base, but it's been like this has kind of been in line with what I thought this team would be. You know, good offensively, probably not as explosive given everything they lost, which has been the case. This is a good offense, it's a productive offense. It has not been a particularly explosive offense at times, which I think was to be expected. I think the defense is a bit of a pleasant surprise, which is a weird thing to say for a defense that still isn't all that good. But I mean, truthfully, like personnel-wise, I thought this defense could have gotten worse this year than it was last year because they didn't really do a lot in the transfer portal. They whiffed on a couple guys. Like they went after Simeon Barrow, who plays for Miami now. They didn't get him, obviously. So, oh, defensive tackle. So, I think you got to give credit to Blake Baker coming in from Missouri. The new defensive coordinator also has a background coaching linebackers. Between that and hiring Bo Davis, defensive line coach away from Texas, I think those guys deserve a lot of credit for developing the talent that was already on the roster and making the front seven better this year, even if it's not great or even up to SEC standards. But all that is to say, like, I think there's some frustration that this team didn't take a bigger step during the offseason. I think there were people voicing concerns that LSU wasn't active enough in the portal, things like that. And I think we're seeing some of the negative effects from that. But I mean, all in all, like this is an LSU team that still controls its destiny, hasn't taken an SEC loss yet. And while it hasn't really been tested, like all these teams keep losing around it. Texas is the only team in the SEC that hasn't lost yet. So, yeah, I mean, I think if you can win this game at home, all of a sudden, the outlook's pretty solid. And, you've got, I think, a real clear path to make the playoff. So I think there's cautious optimism, but I think this game is going to determine a lot because at the end of the day, LSU did have its struggles against South Carolina, against UCLA, teams that are especially in the case of UCLA, not all that good.
Yeah, like I think the another matchup to sort of keep an eye on is how Trey Harris fares against the LSU secondary.
Is he
Because
playing? Is he expected to play?
I just sort of assumed. But he's leading the league or leading the country in yards per route run. Like, and it's not particularly close. But yeah, I mean, he's at 5.67 yards per route run. And the next closest is Harold Fannin Jr. at 4.35, right? I just feel like that and his availability is a huge matchup.
Yeah, because LSU secondary, I mean, I've talked about it already, but they have some issues. I mean, I will say, I think they got Zaire Alexander back, who's like really the only experienced veteran in this group, was a transfer from Southeast Louisiana they added last year and had a really nice start to last season, suffered a torn ACL in October or November, and was a bit slow to get back into the fold. So he missed the first couple games this season, but he's back now. I think that's a huge boost for a secondary that, looking at the guys who are playing, it's guys like Ashton Stamps, who's a sophomore, Javian Toviano, who's a sophomore, PJ Woodland, who's a three-star true freshman, really impressed the staff during the offseason, has seen a lot of playing time. But this is a young LSU secondary. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's a real scary matchup, considering the fact that, like, this defense has struggled against teams like UCLA. I mean, Ethan Garbers had a really good game against this LSU secondary, and I don't think Ethan Garbers is all that great, especially compared to the caliber of quarterback they're going to face in SEC play. So, and the caliber of receivers that these teams have, starting with Ole Miss, who's got some really good ones. Obviously, Juice Wells, too, really good receiver. So, I think that's a major concern. I mean, if I wanted to spin this in Ole Miss's favor, I think you could pretty easily see a reality where Ole Miss forces a couple turnovers, because Nussmeier, I think if there's one issue, he's maybe been a little bit interception prone, though I don't think all of those are his fault per se. But if you want to sell me on an Ole Miss pulling away, it's they get a couple turnovers, and LSU is literally just not capable of slowing down this passing offense, which I don't think is entirely out of the question.
No, I don't think so either. But I also do think that you're going to see something similar to last year because it just seems like that's just
I
what
agree.
happens every time these two teams play each other.
Yeah, I
You
agree.
know, and it's not like Ole Miss's defense was bad last year. Just last year's game just kind of happened.
I mean,
I mean,
LSU also did that to everybody. Like, good defenses they played, they did that too. It's very hard to defend Jaden Daniels and Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas.
I mean, I think Ole Miss is a lot better defensively this year, but I mean they've also had some really frustrating sort of I don't know, spurts on offense. I mean they just sort of sputter at times. Like
Yeah.
the sort of second half against South Carolina last week, and the entire Kentucky game, right? And it's just it's weird because it's like, okay, I mean, Ole Miss has played as very, very well. Granted, the first like 4 weeks were against nobody, but they took care of business in a way that's like a top five team would.
Yeah.
But since then, it's just been like, I don't know if, I'm just looking for some consistency.
Yeah, what do you think like accounts for that, the differential between, because like this is a top, I think a top five offense in terms of EPA. But it does kind of seem like that hasn't always equated to production, at least on the scoreboard.
Yeah, I think the ground game's been up and down. I think Jackson Dart has been up and down. I think that they haven't really gotten a ton of I don't think the offensive line has been as good as it needs to be. And I think that, I mean, like any quarterback, Jackson Dart's numbers go down tremendously when pressured. But also, I mean, Jackson Dart takes sacks at a pretty high rate, So I mean, I think it's even more important on that front. But I think it's also just, small sample size. We're talking about two games, right? And there were times against South Carolina where they looked fine, and then Trey Harris gets hurt, and yeah, I don't know. It should make for an interesting Saturday along with the rest of the slate.
Do you think, talking about the ground game, like, now that we're a few weeks into the season, how do you think the decision Ole Miss made has aged? The decision to not pay Quinshon Judkins necessarily and instead kind of rely on this. Although Henry Parrish has sort of emerged as the main guy, what's been kind of more of a running back by committee thing with him and Ulysses Bentley and stuff. Like, how do you think that decision has aged?
Yeah, I mean, I think people are trying to figure out what's going on with Ulysses Bentley.
Yeah, has he not been playing? Like, his production seems way down.
Just hasn't been playing. Henry Parrish has started taking over, and I think that's worked out pretty well. But just like behind him, they've got Matt Jones, who's a former walk-on that they've sort of thrown in there as the backup, right? And it's been okay. But I think my thing with them is it just sort of feels like it's lacking in explosiveness. I think they've been okay when it's coming to just trying to move the ball down the field, but I think they really miss someone or some additional blocking that could really help them pop a couple big runs. But yeah, I'm sort of running out of time here, so any final predictions?
Yeah, so I've written about this on LSU Wire. You can check it out if you want to see anything more in depth on it. But I think, like I've already said, I see this playing out pretty similarly to how it did last year, and even to a slightly lesser extent the year before. It was still a pretty high scoring game, even though it wasn't particularly close. I kind of give credence to the idea that LSU has played pretty well against this team at home in recent years, even when Ole Miss has maybe been the better team. I think they get the big win here. I've got LSU winning 35 to 31. Don't feel great about that pick, obviously. I think this one really I could see going either way, but I think that you're gonna really see in this game how important it is in SEC play, how good LSU is up front offensively. I think that's gonna make a big difference against pretty good Ole Miss front. I mean, I don't know if Princely Umanmielen's playing. I'm not sure what his status is this week, but even if he does, I think you gotta like the matchup for LSU with the offensive tackles that they've got. So I've got them winning a close game. Again, could really see it going either way, but that's kind of where I'm slightly leaning at the moment.
Yeah, I'm a slight Ole Miss lean, but we'll see how it goes. Once again, you guys can follow Tyler on Twitter at Tyler Natuno. You can follow me on Twitter at BFerrell727. You can find all of our, Ole Miss and Mississippi State coverage at thejournal.com. Tyler, thanks for joining me. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem.